Good day there from the Bloody Aussie Battler and your host Mike Holt. Today I start a series of discussions with Brian Shaw. Now Brian says he's a farmer from Werribee, Victoria, but he's much more than that. Brian has spent years studying constitutional and common law, as well as analysing legislation passed by the federal and state governments. As a result, he has realised what must be done to change the corrupt, treasonous system we currently suffer under and bring us back to Commonwealth of Australia Act 1901 law. Now, Brian has at least 60 grand jury applications at the full court of the Victorian Supreme Court, which is refusing to let the matters be heard. They are in treason. He is also the man who charged Julia Gillard with treason, and we'll have more information on this case in the future. First, a quick word from our sponsors before I bring Brian on. Do you know that by 2030, as many as 800 million jobs could be lost worldwide to automation? Future Blackboard is an educational platform for developing emerging careers, jobs, and skills. Future Blackboard offers courses designed for the future. Are you concerned about cybersecurity? Future Blackboard is offering a course on how to spot and beat hackers, prevent tracking, browse anonymously, and counter government surveillance, as well as master the tools for antivirus, malware, and disk encryption. Future Blackboard is offering a special price for just $65 in cybersecurity and anonymity. Enroll now at www.futureblackboard.com and click on Courses on the menu. Dick Yardley's book, Australian Political and Religious Leaders, Treason, Treachery and Sabotage. Dick exposes how Whitlam, Hawke, Keating, Goss, Rudd and all the other Fabians have destroyed our manufacturing and agriculture. If you want to know exactly how they have done it, get Dick's book at advanceaustralia.com.au and click on Merchandise. Knowledge is power. Get the power to fight the corruption today. I hope you're enjoying the show. Do you know it takes time and money to produce them? If you'd like me to keep doing them, then please consider donating to support my work. Click the donate link on the bloodyaussiebattler.com website. You can donate just once or set up a monthly debit through PayPal. Come on, do it now. Hello, Brian. How are you, mate?
I'm good, thank you.
That's good. Mate, a lot of people have been asking why the government is not operating under our Commonwealth of Australia Constitution Act 1901, and is the constitution that they are using a valid one or not?
That's a critical issue, but what I'd like to do is just address how it should be run first, okay. And in the next session we'll work out who's making it go the other way.
Good idea.
Okay. So the first part we'll just deal with what it appears to be, and I use the word allegedly. We're part of the United Kingdom's legislation, and the Act here, we have to go back to what's called the colonies, and then they became states at Federation, which then moved to the Commonwealth of Australia.
Okay, so let's just backtrack there a moment so that we can make sure everybody understands here. So when Australia was first settled, we had 6 colonies, is that correct?
Apparently.
Okay. And Australia was divided up according to different boundaries than what we have now. The territories didn't exist. So when we came to Federation and they brought in the new 1901 Constitution, each of those colonies became a part of a federated nation of states. Is that correct? Yes.
There's a little secret hidden in there. Apparently, it appears that Section 8 of the United Kingdom section of the preamble, where it retained the word one colony, and they haven't removed that.
That's right, so we're still a British colony.
Beg your pardon?
That's right, we're still a British colony.
And one colony.
Yes.
It only says a colony. So somehow or other, they've kept the word colony operative at Federation.
Hmm.
That's not a mistake. It's done deliberately. But apparently, in the what's called the existing constitution or whatever, that's the principal person, and that is the monarch.
Right.
I don't think that a court would disagree with that. Now, I'm not talking about where it's gone pear-shaped. I'm just talking about what we allegedly know. But underneath the monarch, then sits the Governor-General. Now, most people confuse the Governor-General's role with the Governor's role. They say, you're talking about the Governor-General. I said, no, I'm talking about the Governor. So these colonies that become states all then have governors looking after that part of the land they have to look after, and apparently responsible to the monarch, as in they are under the monarch. So essentially that's our what's called cover, the monarch, the governor general, and then the governors. Now underneath that umbrella sits the solicitor generals for the various states and the attorney generals.
And who appoints them?
Usually the governor general, allegedly, because the biggest problem you have, and it's a big problem, there seems to be a breach between the monarch and the governor general. Now that starts with what you call letters patent. Letters patent preceded the federation document, but the one I've got, a copy of the one I've got, which is only a two-page A3 document, which is apparently the one giving the authority to the Governor-General to act in that capacity. The one I've got is not signed.
And what date is that?
1900. It precedes Federation.
So if it wasn't signed, then we never actually became a federated colony.
Good point. Now remember, there's inbuilt tricks here. Mm. They're not accidents. That's why the word colony still appears in the preamble. That's why the letter, I handed up these letters patent in a magistrate's court many years ago. They're only like the ones I have, and if you see others, they're probably forgeries, because they don't put out two. They don't put out what's called a signed one and an unsigned one. That doesn't happen. Hmm. If they found I had a problem, then they'll probably forge another document. But the one I have got is not signed. Now, when I handed it up in the magistrate's court a number of years ago, it's a big thing, A3, he's got one in his left hand and one in his right hand, two-page thing, all cute and beautiful with all that stuff around the edges. And he said to me, what am I looking for? I said, you're looking for a signature. And he said, there isn't one. And then he threw it on the floor between the bench and the bar table. Anyone else that produces one that's got a signature, I would ask, why is there two? An unsigned one. Now, no one would let an unsigned one walk out the door. Hmm. This is only what you call how you think the document's through. Would they let an unsigned document go out there to have a look around? No, they wouldn't let that happen. If they found they had an unsigned one that should have had a signature on it, would they forge the signature? Possibly. So the originating letters patent should be under challenge. Reasonable comment?
I agree. So let me just clarify this for listeners. So the original letters patent was unsigned, and that was to appoint the Governor General. Is that correct?
They're his instructions as to how he should be handling the country under the Queen.
Right.
But the document that I have, is an unsigned two-page document that apparently is the one that formed or gave the Governor-General the position.
And are you sure this is a genuine document?
I haven't got a clue. But what I am saying is, I've got an unsigned document, and now I'm saying that's an ordinary document to come under challenge in any court of law. And the only ones who can really look at it correctly will be UK authorities, not Australian authorities. And then they've got to put the other one on, what's called the signed one. And then you get a problem with just what's called, it may have a signature at the top of the document. That's not how you sign documents. Right. Your document, your signature part is always at the end of the document, so it really is a compilation of the contents of that document, not one at the top, and then you can add whatever you want underneath it. Mm. It doesn't work like that. So that's really what you call how we became or got a constitution. But we got a constitution from the United Kingdom that does not have a constitution itself.
Yeah.
That creates a big problem. So the question becomes, well, what's the UK running under? They don't have a constitution. So what? How did we get out from that and become what we are?
I hope you're enjoying the show. Do you know it takes time and money to produce them? If you'd like me to keep doing them, then please consider donating to support my work. Click the donate link on the bloodyaussiebattler.com website. You can donate just once or set up a monthly debit through PayPal. Come on, do it now. Yeah, I've often wondered this. So we really don't have a constitution in the UK at all?
There's none in the UK.
So it's just run on common law and precedents?
Statute law.
Yeah, statute law.
But there's two big statutes, and they are the cornerstone of the UK law. The 1688 Bill of Rights and the Act of Settlement in 1701. Now, the average Aussie, including the court people, haven't read those two documents, but they are incorporated into our Commonwealth Constitution at Section 49. They are inherent there. So Section 49 of the Commonwealth Constitution kicks in to uncover those two big statutes.
And that's where all our rights and freedoms are enshrined.
Allegedly, because the UK's just buried those two statutes. They've jumped clean over the top of them. They don't use them. They don't obey them. And neither do we.
No.
This is where it all begins to go wrong. So that when they did what you call Sue versus Hill in the High Court in 1999, they did that just prior to the Commonwealth referendum to see if the people wanted a republic or to keep the constitutional monarch. The decision of the High Court judges in Sue versus Hill was that the UK is the foreign power in Section 44 of the Commonwealth Constitution. Now, that decision is bad in law. It was done for a different reason than what the Aussies think it was done for. And they've seen the consequences of who's being chucked out of Parliament in the last year or two under Section 44, but subsection 1. And most people have not read the whole of Section 44 correctly. Mm. There's a little bit at the bottom that doesn't seem to have a subsection. There's five subsections, but another little bit at the bottom, which is absolutely critical. It says, shall be incapable of being chosen. Now, do you know what those words mean?
No.
Now, why don't you know what they mean? There's a good reason to ask that. It means nobody's judged on those words.
Mm.
No court decision on those words. What it means is that the whole selection panel may be guilty of the crimes. Got it?
Yeah.
That means everyone who thinks I'm really important, I better be on the Labor Party selection panel, working out who the nominees will be and who the candidates are and all that sort of rubbish. But what they don't understand is they may be criminally charged the same way as the politician. Because that's what subsection 44 is. It's five subsections. They had a little dance on subsection 1, but they only danced on it from the decision of Sue versus Hill. But Sue versus Hill was basically to overturn the 1688 Bill of Rights and the Act of Settlement. Are you aware of that?
No, I wasn't aware of that.
Well, to do that, you're actually now attacking UK law.
Oh, it's a real can of worms, because if you read Section 44 carefully, it states that anyone can sit in our parliament who is a Commonwealth subject. And that means anybody from the UK, from Kenya, from South Africa, from India, anybody who is part of the Commonwealth, Canada, can sit in our parliament. And this is what they were going on about. We had all these people from different Commonwealth countries sitting in parliament. They said, no, you're not sitting here right. So who's right? The Constitution or these people?
Different question. When Rudd became the Prime Minister and Gillian Gillard became the Deputy Prime Minister, from memory, the year 2007, did they take the oath of allegiance that's in the Constitution?
As far as I know, no.
Yeah, they refused to.
Mm.
The Governor General at the time was Jeffrey. So why did he let them sit in the Parliament when they refused to take the oath, which is compulsory at Section 42? Section 42 makes it compulsory. The schedule then says what the words are. They didn't do that. Why did they not do it if this is the constitution they were elected under? Mm. You know, like the process is they put up their hands and say, we want to be a politician. Mm. Some yahoo then nominates them with Rudd and Gillard. That's the Labor Party. But if you've got 10 people sitting at the selection panel for the Labor Party, are they caught by the bottom section, shall be incapable of being chosen? Fair comment?
Yeah.
So now we've got to what you call the basis of the alleged constitution. In the next section, we're going to talk about what went wrong and how it's gone wrong. Mm. Okay? And then in the third section, we'll talk about how we can address that as the people. So let's break now. I'm only saying that because people on listening to it on a whatever on their phone, that's enough of a break. Let's catch the next section.
All right, Brian, thank you. And we'll be back soon, listeners, and with more head scratching. You have been listening to the Bloody Aussie Battler podcast.